this moonshine that Jeff mentioned this morning, less famous than the Monstrous case, different from the Umbral case, but involving the Conway group and some relatives at C equals 12. I'll review old things and say some somewhat new things. To the extent that I say anything new, it's in these three papers that were written with a cohort of really excellent collaborators, most of whom are here. And so you can talk to them, a bunch of students and postdocs at Stanford, some who've moved on, and then Miranda and John. And all group theory questions will be directed to John immediately. Okay, so one of the earliest examples of moonshine involves a simple C equals 12 chiral conformal field theory. Chiral conformal field theories are deeply related in all kinds of ways to the geometry of even self-dual lattices, which occur in 8k dimensions. As you go up in dimension, the number of such lattices multiplies pretty quickly. But in dimension 8, there's a unique such lattice, the E8 root lattice, which is depicted here. And the CFT I'm going to talk about is intimately related to the E8 root lattice. Okay, so it was discovered a long time ago, meaning starting in the mid-80s and then expanded upon greatly by John in 2005, that if you look at the supersymmetric conformal field theory associated to the E8 lattice, so you add the Fermi superpartners of the boson spanning the lattice, then you get a kind of moonshine for the Conway group. So more precisely, just as in the case of monstrous moonshine, where you need to orbifold the Leech lattice to remove the states at the lowest level, here you should consider a Z2 orbifold of the supersymmetrized theory on the E8 lattice. This projects out the moduli in the NS sector. And so you end up with a completely rigid object. The NS sector partition function you can read off using E8 current algebra, E8 theta functions. And it has this basic form. E4 is the standard Eisenstein series, and the thetas are the standard Jacobi theta functions. So the Q expansion starts at Q to the minus a half. You project it out to lightest states. And then there's a nice series of integers, positive integers. And the coefficients in the Q series decompose nicely into representations of the sporadic group Conway 0. Okay, so for instance, 276 is 276. At the 2048, you have this decomposition, and so on and so forth. Now, this theory is of interest to physicists. This talk will be maybe more directed at a physical audience than the previous talks. So it's of interest to physicists for various reasons. One is that at C equals 12, you could hope it finds some direct application in the superstring, though that's been difficult to do so far. Another context where it appears and may play an important role is in the study for possible holographic duals to anti-de Sitter quantum gravity in three dimensions. You've all heard that there's a correspondence between anti-de Sitter gravity in D plus one dimensions and CFT in D dimensions. A few years ago, Witten tried to enumerate candidates for pure gravity and pure supergravity in ADS3 candidate duals. And at the smallest possible value of the central charge for a chiral conformal field theory dual to supergravity, he found a unique candidate, which was precisely this Conway symmetric CFT I mentioned. So it's a candidate dual to some kind of maybe chiral supergravity theory with extremely negative cosmological constant, the most negative value consistent with various assumptions. Okay, so I'll take that as reason enough to try and understand its structure. Now, there's a more useful way to view this theory for us. I started with the geometry of the E8 lattice, but there's an alternative formulation as a Z2 orbifold of the theory of 24 chiral fermions. So in the fermion picture, there's a more symmetric view of the partition function. Each complex pair gives a theta over eta. And so the partition function of the orbifold can be written as a simple sum of theta functions. In this way of considering the model with the 24 fermions, there's a manifest spin 24 symmetry. If you consider the dimension 3/2 spin fields that would interpolate between NS and R sectors, you can show that there's a choice of n equals 1 supercurrent that enhances the model from n equals 0 to n equals 1 and breaks the spin 24 symmetry to the Conway group.
Okay.
Yeah?
Is there a simple way of understanding why that's not a
group? Okay, so I mean,
you might have said something like, well, the spin field is a spinner representation, that's a 34, and I should look at the stabilizer component of the spinner representation or something like that.
Well, what's done then is to look at the OP. So you start writing general combinations of these many thousands of spin fields you look at the OPE of the resulting object of spin 3/2, and you get a number of conditions by requiring the poles that you wouldn't want in the OPE of an n equals 1 supercurrent shouldn't be present.
Right.
And those conditions apparently reduce you to this Conway group.
I guess I wasn't trying to understand Conway. I'm just trying to understand why it wasn't a continuous group.
You mean why the conditions requiring those OPE coefficients to vanish don't leave?
Don't leave some subgroup of SF24 that stabilizes a component of the spinner representation or something like that.
It's a bunch of algebraic equations on the element of spin 24, right?
Right.
So how many equations are there?
Right.
If there are enough equations, it'll leave, you know, zero-dimensional solutions.
Yeah, I mean, well, we can go through it. There are thousands of equations.
I think I asked John, too. I maybe he was explained to me. I just probably didn't understand it well enough. It stuck in my mind. It's always kind of...
It's a good question. I'll call that a group theory question.
Okay.
So there's a natural expression for partition functions also when you insert group elements of the group that stabilizes the supercharge. So you can consider some conjugacy class in the Conway group, insert a representative, and compute these twine partition functions. So the way you compute these is if you consider the 24-dimensional representation, let the epsilons denote the eigenvalues of G in the 24 that come in conjugate pairs that we separate by 12 in the 24 epsilons. Okay, and so we can represent these as exponentials of some phases where the z's now take values between 0 and 1/2. Okay, and then there's a completely general formula for the twine partition functions that was proven by John and an undergraduate last year, which is, you know, they take some simple form in terms of theta functions with arguments determined by the phases and some simple representation theoretic data giving traces in the 24 and in the spinner. Okay, and these satisfy all the beautiful properties you'd expect for moonshine. They're normalized principal moduli for certain genus zero groups gamma G that preserve the, you know, the twined partition function. Now, our interest in this theory, whereby our, at least I mean myself and my young collaborators, developed in a sort of roundabout way. So a few years ago, Iguchi, Oguri, and Tachikawa made this interesting observation that the elliptic genus of K3, which I've written here with this being the phase associated to the U1, has this miraculous representation in terms of a sum over characters of long representations of the n equals 4 algebra with coefficients that are highly suggestive of some kind of M24 hidden in the story. And you've all heard about this. Now, it may or may not be that in the end, K3 plays an important role in understanding this case of umbral moonshine. It's not clear. But it does suggest that there might be more general relations between exceptional geometric objects that have been of interest to string theorists, for instance, in string compactification, and examples of moonshine. So it seems worth exploring. Now, in that regard, there's a famous relationship between special holonomy groups, the groups that control parallel transport when you move around on a Riemannian manifold, and space-time supersymmetry in the context of string theory. So for instance, a famous equation in Green, Schwartz, and Witten tells you that Calabi-Yau threefolds will preserve supersymmetry because if you take the 16-dimensional spinners that control 10-dimensional gravitinos and you decompose them under an SO6 times four-dimensional Whittle group, then for each trivial element in the 4 of SU4 in the holonomy, you'll end up with a spinner that's preserved. And, you know, then the famous equation 4 equals 3 plus 1, which seems appropriate for a moonshine conference, tells you that when you have SU3 holonomy, you get a certain number of supercharges. Now, Berger, I'm not sure how to pronounce the name, classified all the special holonomy groups that arise in Riemannian geometry many years ago. And the list giving supersymmetric models that arise in superstring theory is quite small. They're the SUN holonomy, Calabi-Yau spaces, SPN hyperkähler spaces, and then there are two exceptional cases that occur only in 7 and 8 dimensions, G2 and spin 7, which lagged a bit behind these in their development because they're not complex, but compact examples were finally constructed by Joyce in the 1990s, more or less by using orbifold technology. Now, world sheet n equals 1 supersymmetry is necessary to formulate superstrings, but compactifications that yield spacetime supersymmetry actually enjoy larger supersymmetry algebras. And so in any of these cases, if you have strings propagating on this space, there's naturally associated some additional chiral structure. The dictionary is roughly the following. Calabi-Yau spaces in all dimensions correspond to a 2,2 superconformal algebra on the world sheet, hyper-Kähler manifolds to a 4,4, so that's what appears in K3. G2 manifolds, here I'm using a rough language, correspond to a 1,1 supersymmetry with the addition of something like a tricriticalizing sector that replaces the U1 of the n equals 2 algebra or the SU2 of the n equals 4 algebra. And spin 7 corresponds, again, to minimal supersymmetry, but plus something morally like an Ising sector. And this enhances the algebra to something that W people call this. I'll just call it the spin 7 algebra. So at C equals 12, which is where we're working today, a wide variety of examples can appear. You can get Calabi-Yau spaces, you can get hyper-Kähler spaces, and you can get spin 7 geometries. And so, you know, we looked at the elliptic genera of these things. This isn't unrelated to some comments Jeff made at the end of his talk. And there are actually some rather interesting properties in the elliptic genera at specific values of things like the Euler character. But we had trouble making a very precise story. This is related to the fact that it's difficult to make a precise story out of K3 and Mathieu Moonshine. So it turns out that the C equals 12 model that I've already described is a sort of simplified playground in which I can make many of the observations that we were making heuristically in elliptic genera somewhat precise, and so that's what I'm going to tell you about today. Okay, so to do this, I need to enhance the world sheet supersymmetry. And so what I'm going to do is to view the super E8 theory as furnishing, instead of an n equals 0 or n equals 1 theory, a 2,2 or a 4,4 or a spin 7 SW3½2 superconformal algebra. Okay, it will be a sort of simplified model that realizes what are likely much more symmetry than you can find in a really generic realization of these algebras on a curved spacetime. But it might be a good place to get a handle on to what extent appearances in the elliptic genus are meaningful.
Is there
also a T2? No, there probably is, but I haven't worked it out. Okay, and we'll see that each superalgebra is naturally associated to various sporadic groups by some beautiful geometry in the book of Conway and Sloan that John explained to us. Okay, so the key to enhancing supersymmetry is the following. If you're a physicist and somebody hands you a supercharge, what you do is you look for a continuous symmetry that could possibly be the R-symmetry group of a larger superalgebra. Then you start taking OPEs with the supercharge you've been given, and that should generate the other spin 3½ generators. Okay. So for n equals 4, which will be the sort of paradigmatic case, one requires, for small n equals 4, an SU2 R symmetry. And so what we should do is look for a choice of SU2 R symmetry in this model. Since we have a free fermion description, it's actually not hard to find such choices. Okay, you can generate an SU2 by choosing three of the fermions, writing a current, epsilon ijk, lambda j, lambda k, and then checking that, so this gives three free indices. And you can check that those three indices give you, you know, three spin 1 currents that satisfy, in some basis, the SU2 current algebra. This is also a great question, and maybe related to lots of other interesting things, but it's not going to appear today. I think the answer is yes. Now, if you bosonize the fermions, okay, you write, there's some boring 2D field theory here that I'm going to summarize in two transparencies. So if you bosonize the fermions, you write the currents in bosonic language, you write the n equals 1 supercurrent in the same way, okay, you can show that you obtain from OPEs of these currents with the single supercharge that was constructed earlier a set of three other spin 3½ objects. And the algebra of these spin 3½ objects you can calculate directly to be of this form. And after redefining the spin 3½ fields appropriately, you get what you realize is a garden variety n equals 4 small superalgebra. So together with the stress tensor of the free fermion form or the bosonized form, this gives then a copy of n equals 4. Okay. Now it should be clear that then you can do other contractions of this. You could choose two fermions instead of three, bosonize them and write a U1 current, and construct an n equals 2 algebra. You could choose a single fermion. This could be the Ising extension of the n equals 1 superalgebra and get this SW3½,2. You could have chosen more fermions and made a large n equals 4. And the G2 realization is more complicated.
So is this equivalent to just taking four free fermions for bosons and doubling this?
Say,
if I take four free fermions and four free bosons, then I have a simple realization of the algebra. Is this whole bosonization that, is it just two copies of that? Of the C equal to six, the simplest thing I can do in free field theory?
The central charge won't be six.
So two copies.
That's a good question.
Is it just that?
I don't think so, because I don't see the natural division into two. Okay. So I doubt it, but I haven't thought about the question.
It's equivalent to eight bosons on the E8 lattice plus eight.
But the mix is under the current, is what I'm asking. Can you?
So I don't think you can separate them.
Okay. I don't think they separate.
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about how this construction, which looks like an ad hoc thing a physicist would do in free field theory, is natural or not natural in the geometry and the group theory. Okay, so the Conway symmetry of the theory plays nicely in the sense I described earlier, with an n equals 1 superconformal symmetry. The other superconformal algebras actually also play nicely with various symmetries, other global symmetries of the model, in a way that's also natural from the lattice theoretic point of view. So we can think of this in the following way. If you choose a triplet or a doublet or a singlet of fermions of the 24 present in the theory, that's the same as choosing a 3-plane or a 2-plane or a 1-plane in the 24-dimensional representation of the Conway zero symmetry that commuted with the n equals 1 superalgebra. Okay, so you can make a map between choices of fermions that go into your superalgebra and choices of planes in the 24 of Conway. For instance, the global symmetry of the n equals 4 theory will be a subgroup of Conway zero that fixes the given 3-plane associated with your choice of fermions. Now, there's this incredible book by Conway and Sloan, in chapter 10 of which there's a nice discussion of subgroups of the Conway group that you can realize by fixing 3-planes, 2-planes, and so forth in the weak lattice. So for the rest of the talk, what I'm going to do is focus on a specific set of those choices, which corresponds to specific choices of my currents in the physical point of view, or specific choices of the geometry of those 3 and 2 and 1 planes in Conway and Sloan. But one could make other choices that I'll just briefly mention at the end. So the rough structure you should keep in mind is that you can view the model as an n equals 0 theory with spin 24 symmetry, an n equals 1 theory with Conway symmetry, or you can add a 1-plane, 2-plane, or 3-plane that's fixed, and the groups that those preserve are M24, M23, and M22. And this should generate natural n equals 4 M22 modules, n equals 2 M23 modules, and n equals 1 M24 modules. Or, well, n equals SW 3/2, comma 2. So let's go through the n equals 4 case, which is, in some sense, the simplest. Okay, in the cases that the superconformal algebra has even a U1 symmetry, here you have SU2, but you can look at the Cartan, it's natural to write not just the partition function, but a graded partition function that keeps track of the U1 quantum number. So we'll define z of tau and z, little z, to be a trace with q to the l naught, y to the j naught, y is e to the 2 pi I little z. And you can show that that improves the expression I had before with theta to the 12th over eta to the 12th to something of this form, where now one of the theta functions has an argument determined by z. Or in the E8 language, it promotes the theta functions to z-dependent theta functions. Now, you can expand this thing in terms of characters of the n equals 4 superconformal algebra. The unitary highest weight irreducible representations are labeled by two quantum numbers, by the conformal dimension and the SU2 spin. There are short and long representations. The short representations have h equal to m minus 1 over 4, where m is related to the central charge. It will be 3 in this talk, m. And then j can run from 0 to 1. As well as sort of non-BPS massive representations that have larger values of h, and again, j going up to 1. So the graded characters were determined some time ago, actually, by, I think, Iguchi and Taormina. So they're given by these traces. M is fixed to be 3. H and j will vary depending on which multiplet we consider. And I'll discuss their precise form in a moment. It will be a little bit interesting. Okay, but for now, we can just decompose the graded partition function that I mentioned. the decomposition of these characters takes this form. There's a 21, and then there's this line with the one-half representations and the separate line with the one representations for J, the coefficients being 5, 6, D, 2, 10, and so forth. And we noticed, and it was in fact noticed by Jeff Harvey in 2010 in unpublished work, that these numbers are suggestive of some sort of M22 in the problem. Okay, so the 21 is the 21, the 5, 6, D is a pair of conjugate representations, and so forth. To understand the modular properties and see if this is meaningful and interesting, we have to define some objects. Okay, so these characters, which as I said were determined long ago, can be expressed in the following way. So now there's all kinds of notation with unpleasant functions that I need to define. So, yeah. Sure.
In this case, so is there a massless representation as well coming here? And
the first two, I think.
And those, so unlike the K3, those also are dimensions of reps of
Let's see, in your case, M minus 1, you said is 2, so we have 0, 1 half, and 1. And those are the massless representations? J equals 0, 1 half, and 1?
I think so.
I see, but the yeah. arc is in this case.
Yeah, this one's
right.
Right.
No virtual character.
There's no, yeah,
nothing virtual.
Yeah, but when you get the Mach modular form, you have to rewrite it in, using
right.
the relationship.
We'll see in a second. There will be negative numbers in the Mach modular. Okay, so let me define the notation of these characters. There's three functions, psi, there's the theta functions, and there's mu. Mu has this kind of form, which is familiar to people who play with generalized Appel-Lurch sums. Psi is a meromorphic Jacobi form of weight and index 1, given this way explicitly in terms of theta functions. And then there's these other standard sort of theta functions that arise in decomposing Jacobi forms. Okay, that satisfy some nice symmetry relations. If you shift R by 2m, this is one of the properties that Albrecht talked about this morning. So we can usefully think of this vector of theta functions with R running over that range of values as a vector value Jacobi form of weight 1/2 and index m. Explicitly, it satisfies these kinds of identities. If you do an S transformation, then there's a matrix S theta. If you do a T transformation, there's a matrix T theta. And these 2m by 2m matrices are just simple matrices of phases that are known explicitly. Okay, the object mu also has some interesting modular properties. You can define a non-holomorphic completion of mu in this way that looks standard to people who play with Mach modular forms. The S's are defined here. Again, there's a vector valued structure to them. And then this thing transforms as a Jacobi form of weight 1 and index m. And these S's are the vector valued cusp form. Okay, so now we can rewrite the graded partition function in a way that makes the modular properties more interesting looking in connection with other moonshines. So here is the expansion in characters. Here's the expansion in terms of psi, mu, and theta functions. And based on the modular properties I discussed in the previous three transparencies, we see that H is naturally thought of, this H here, as a weight 1/2 vector-valued Mach modular form. It has a priori 6 components, but only 2 of them are actually non-trivial and independent. The rest are related by symmetries. And the shadow is given by 24S3, that cusp form. So now the interesting question is the coefficients in the H's. Okay, so we know from our earlier discussion that the CFT definitely should have some nice M22 module, an N equals 4 supersymmetric M22 module. So we expect that we can study twined partition functions under any group element in M22. And there should be some nice formula for twining genera ZG that have a trace in the 24 of G in front of the Appel-Lurch sum and then appropriate twined Mach modular forms as coefficients. And these coefficients should take the form of traces in the representations that we think appear at a given weight. Okay, so that should naturally be given by characters of some M22 module.
So in this case, the mu is that the character of any
prism representation? Well, it doesn't mean fixed
form,
right? So you should.
What's VG?
Say again?
What is the G doing, the superscript
G? Oh, that's just parameterizing the group because we're going to consider many different groups. Even with n equals 4, there are many different groups that are possible, which I'll talk about later on. So there's an extra tag.
Is mu a character of an n equal 4 representation related to a character of n equal 4 representation?
Mu times psi. Mu divided by psi.
Which character is that?
It's one of the mass. It's one of the massless ones.
Okay. So we checked this formula explicitly. We decomposed the untwisted module and then checked the characters explicitly. For the first 30 or so coefficients for all conjugacy classes of M22, this works. There is an M22 module.
It has to work.
By construction, it worked. By construction, it works.
Unlike all the other cases.
I agree. It's constructed to work, but you know, you check. Okay, the functions H have interesting Mach modular properties as well. So if you define the Hecke congruent subgroups in the standard way, you find that ZG is a weak Jacobi form of weight 0 and index 2 for the groups gamma naught of OG, where OG is the order of G. And these HGs are vector-valued Mach modular forms of weight 1/2 with a shadow given by an appropriate trace times that cusp form. OK, I'm going to sketch some other results, and then I'm going to talk about connections to other moonshines. So precisely analogous considerations hold in the other two cases I was going to discuss, the holonomies or the superalgebras related, in some sense, to SUN holonomy and spin 7 holonomy. I'll just summarize the results, because all the considerations are exactly analogous. In the n equals 2 case, there's a decomposition in n equals 2 characters. Again, there are two Mach modular forms that appear, governed by coefficients of the two sets of characters. One recognizes irreps of M23 in the coefficients of these two lines. And again, you find a pair of vector-valued Mach modular forms with twinings governed by forms under congruent subgroups then of SL2Z related to the order of the M23 element. In both the M22 and M23 cases of what I've talked about here, there's an important additional property that the special functions, meaning these H's, that arise satisfy. So let's recall that in the case of monstrous moonshine, there's this genus zero condition. The Mackay-Thompson series are Haupt module with only a polar term at the cusp, representative of I infinity, and no poles at other cusps for other congruent subgroups. Now, in umbral moonshine, there's also a special condition, which has been conjectured by Jeff and John and Miranda. And it's roughly, okay, so there's an M associated with each umbral group, and these H's are the relevant modular objects. And it's basically the same kind of condition, that there's some non-singularity on the H's. And then following an idea expressed in a paper by Duncan and Frankel many years ago, it might be the case that the unifying property of those examples of moonshine is the constructibility of the functions as Rademacher sums starting with a single polar piece. Maybe that's the unifying special property between umbral and monstrous. Okay, so you could ask, are there any analogous special properties for the functions arising in the M22 and M23 Mach modular moonshines that we constructed so far in this talk? Well, it turns out that among all the possible symmetry groups that stabilize 2 or 3 planes in the 24 of Conway, I'm not going to list all the other ones, but in our paper there are tons. Okay, the M22 and M23 functions are unique in satisfying these properties in the two cases. Again, there's a fixed behavior as tau goes to I infinity with non-singularity at other cusps, and that's true in both cases with slightly different details of the singularity.
And the motivation for this condition is some
The motivation.
Anything I said about that was on my third slide. I'm not going to say anything else about that. Yeah. But okay, yes, for people who haven't
understood why this might be a relevant condition, the idea is the path integral in quantum gravity in ADS3 is naturally given by sum over SL2z orbits starting with some fixed saddle point. And so the hope is if these examples were related to ADS gravity, that would also be a very natural way to generate the partition functions and the Twine partition functions. Okay, and that turns out to be true in these other examples. I don't know if it means there's a related gravity theory or not.
No, I agree. That depends on the details of the saddle and so on and so forth.
Is it hard to get a half out to from supergravity computations?
Difficult to get weight a half out. You mean instead of just getting the actual weight zero?
In other words, you get weights where the Poincaré series converge rather than where you need to regularize to get out of marker.
So the one example I know where people claim to have done this on the nose is for, well, actually, there are two where people claim this would work on the nose from gravity. One is the chiral gravity theory that's supposed to be dual to the leech lattice CFT. There's a claim that one can get precisely, the partition function and presumably the Twine partition functions by doing a gravitational path integral. It's weight zero, right. And Conway, I think the Conway theory is the same thing. You could get the weight zero thing out. I don't know of other gravitational cases where people did this. I mean, Roberto, you might actually know.
Okay. Well, you guys have done this, but
yeah.
And you and
Tish.
Yeah.
No, that's not way tough.
But you've gotten
1/8.
Not way tough. Negative weight, right? Yes. You've got negative weight.
If you have positive weight, then if you get C tau plus D with positive.
Okay. Let me talk at the end about M24 and other groups that we considered. So there's a superalgebra relevant to a spin 7 holonomy, which I'll call the spin 7 algebra. It was connected to geometry in 1994 in a paper by Shadashvili and Vafa. It's a sort of odd algebra. It adjoins to the spin 2 stress tensor and the normal supercharge G, another spin 2 field, which you should think of as the stress tensor of the Ising sector. And then if you take OPEs of the normal N equals 1 currents with the spin 2 field, you find you need another spin 5 halves fermionic generator, and then the whole thing closes. So the structure has an L, a G associated to the stress tensor and the supercharge, and then another set of Virasoro modes for the Ising stress tensor and some spin 5 halves generators. If you're the kind of person who cares, here's the algebra, okay? We're very proud we corrected a few errors in Shadashvili and Vafa, but I think they had the right structure. Okay, in the NS sector and the R sector, the characters were derived in a recent rather Pyrrhic paper written by my students. There are three massless representations and two continuous families of massive representations. The NS partition function can again be expanded in some nice way in terms of characters of this algebra. Okay, and you read off the coefficients by exact analogy with what we did before. Here are some of the numbers you get. Okay, and you see that there are some very, very simple M24 decompositions. Well, maybe not quite so simple. So already here at the second or third level, you see that you need 10 or 11 M24 representations. But in fact, the thing is totally determined. So there's no guesswork involved. Okay, now, by analogy with our previous constructions, these can be again collected to give Q series for a two-component vector valued weight 1/2 Mach module form. You actually have the symmetry. It has to work. Okay, you may not understand how the symmetry acts, but it must work. Again, the shadow is 24S, where S is this kind of analog of the S3 I had before. No, you definitely do have an M24 action, which you may or may not understand how to implement yourself. This is related to Jeff's question about really seeing the Conway zero symmetry.
Okay, but it's really good.
But I mean, you know the characters, or you?
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's just the subgroup of spin 24 that stabilizes.
Absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. The subgroup of spin 24 that stabilizes.
Once you know the characters, that's enough.
A one plane.
Okay, so in this case, as well as in the n equals 2 and n equals 4 cases, there are also groups besides the Matthieu group which appear. I can't remember all the names. There's a McLaughlin group and a Higginson's group and all kinds of other groups. Conway 2, Conway 3. Okay, unlike the previous cases, none of the other groups that appear for n equals 2 and n equals 4, and so far none of the groups that appeared in this one-plane stabilizing case seem to have magical properties of the twining functions that we could identify. Our guess, since Conway 0, M22, and M23 are all singled out in some beautiful way, was that M24 would be singled out in some beautiful way in this case. It probably is, but we don't know how. It would be nice to know how. And I'm done. So here's what I think we learned. We can give explicitly realized modules underlying moonshine relating Mach modular forms to certain sporadic simple groups, a large number. The geometry of K-planes in the 24 determines both the extended superalgebra that's relevant and the subgroups of the Conway group that appear. And via the relationship between 2D superalgebras and manifolds of special holonomy that I reviewed at the start, it is tempting to think that these symmetries broken to smaller subgroups may underlie the geometry, or at least the elliptic genera, of some hyper-KR Calabi-Yau or spin 7 manifolds. C equals 12 is precisely the case Jeff discussed in the last talk. It would be interesting to know if that could be made precise. But as I said, this seems difficult to make precise, just as it has been for K3 in the case of M24. Thank you.
Questions? Discriminant property?
I haven't thought about it at all.
I mean, there's not. No, we looked at it.
Just a comment.
Or Sarah.
Sarah Hearn and I have done a complete list of stabilizers of all sub-lattices. So you can look at all the groups, every one.
I see.
See if M24 is
special. Oh, you mean for dimension larger than 3?
All dimensions. There's 298 classes.
I see. So we can generate 298 lists of modular forms and then
see
what's
special. Well, some of them have dimension bigger than I mean, there are some, you know, there are 63 in dimension 3. I think. So I can show you this.
Okay.
In fact, it was on my last slide and I went over it.
In your elliptic genera of K32, did you see any really interesting properties?
No, it's not there.
It's not there. Yeah.
This is, we just finished it this week.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question related to the 3D gravity interpretation?
I can't stop you.
No, I'm just curious for these cases where you're the twining cases, I think you call them, when you insert a group element G into the trace. Has anyone given a gravitational interpretation to those objects? Like, what would be the path interval in 3D gravity that you would be computing that will mimic inserting this element?
Well, we can almost surely do it in the two cases projected by Witten, the monster case and the Conway case, because there you actually know the boundary theory, and you actually know precisely how the symmetry acts, so it would be computing the gravitational partition function with the insertion. And the insertion can be mapped to a symmetry of the ADS fields, the generalized free fields in ADS,
but
and so we can.
That's the thing. I want to understand how the G
directly acts. In
terms
of the
can you say something more geometrical than
I just told you the algorithm I would implement. I would map each chiral primary to the appropriate tower of bulk KK modes, and then say I know from the Leech lattice theory that it must act this way, and so here's what it does in the bulk. And then if you are powerful enough to magically compute that bulk supergravity action with negative M Planck cosmological constant, that would be a symmetry of that gravity
Lagrangian.
No, but
let's say gravity.
But it's plain vanilla gravity with an extremely negative cosmological constant. So there's no the
bulk action should be thought of as some very, very nonlinear thing. You can't truncate to quadratic
right,
terms.
Right. So you don't have a guess of like, okay, let's pretend that it's classical for a second.
I don't see a small expansion parameter.
I think this G in the
spin.
John gave
an interpretation of this, though.
Right.
With Frankel.
Yes,
the symmetry acts on the BTZ black holes.
No, but,
no,
but I think she, I think she's asking for
a,
I know,
directly.
She wants to act
yeah.
on terms of, look, if you just tell her how it acts on states at a given level, that, that can read off from the
yeah,
she wants a gravitational.
Isn't the G in
the
spin 24?
Yeah.
So wouldn't it be a little bit like the z-dependence in the elliptic genus? Remember, the z-dependence in the elliptic genus is dual to, of course, the U1 current of the CFT, but that's a Chern-Simons calculation
mm-hmm.
where you specify how the conjugacy class of the flat gauge field as you go out to the boundary. So it's a Chern-Simons, I mean, that, you know, the z-dependence is all on a theta function.
Yeah, but you don't think that there would be a linearized action that has manifest monster symmetry in an ADS3.
It came from the spin 24, which does have current. So you might try and construct the group element that way and couple it to a field.
Sure. Yeah.
So the point of view that we suggest in the paper with Igor is the following. So the Rademacher sum you can regard as a sum of a cosets of SL2Z. You can reinterpret that as a sum of a geometries.
Yeah.
Torus, what are the words on? Sum of the geometries, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
there's a solid torus, you fill in different cycles in the solid torus.
Yeah, exactly. So then what does it mean to replace the sort of move to some other conjugacy class in the monster that's replacing SL2Z with gamma n, for example, for the various values of n. So geometrically you can interpret that as a sum over slightly richer families of geometries.
Right, like they look like conical defects,
yeah.
like in the book, but
there's
no natural way how to argue, like you're picking some subset of these conical defects.
You want to know which singularities are allowed by gravity?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
yeah,
I want
the two of you had this long discussion, like, back in 2009, right?
Yeah, I'll introduce myself.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if you're...
Because
there's freaking involution. So.
It seems similar to the z dependence in the elliptic genus. There, you also had to allow some singular dependence in order. You knew where the singularity came from. There, it was because you realized from the Chern-Simons point of view that you were inserting a Wilson line in the spin J representation. And so that I think that Wilson, I think that Wilson line induced the singularity in the geometry. So if you could interpret, this is coupling to a current, I understand that the current symmetry, the continuous symmetry was broken,
but,
it's still a group element, right, in spin 24, right? So it's some exponentiated current.
You think there are massive gauge fields that got a mass because
something
the continuous
like,
symmetry
yeah,
was broken?
Something like that.
And then the massive gauge.
There's a Wilson line.
But
yeah.
I think the singularity we're talking about here due to the fact that the group has now acting linear involution. So maybe you do know how to interpret those.
So, what are the cases without? There's many cases without.
Yeah, but I think what she's asking is like how to derive it actually from the gravity theory instead of just interpreting it.
In fact, the mass of those gauge fields must be high enough that they're already black holes, right?
Yeah.
By construction. So I'm not sure that would give a very concrete picture at k equals 1. At higher k, if there were a symmetry, maybe you could get such a picture.
So may I suggest that this continues for the rest of the afternoon? How long you want to discuss it? And let's thank Shamit.